Blog Talk Radio.
It's Smoke Signals, brought to you by IndiansBaseballInsider.com and hosted by Tony LaStoria and Jeff Ellis. They're talking Tribe. Good evening and welcome back to Wigwam on Tuesday night. Another edition of Smoke Signals. I'm Tony LaStoria of Indians Baseball Insider with your co-host Jeff Ellis of Baseball Insider and also Scout.com's lead MLB draft analyst. We're not going to get into the draft just yet. I think it might be a good time to get into that maybe starting next week, considering it is next week. Make sure you follow Jeff's guy's podcast. He does with Michael Hattery as well. So if you love draft stuff, make sure you check that out. But I think maybe we'll do a special, Tuesday night, it will be the second day of the draft, I think. Maybe we can kind of
it'll
do
it'll be
a,
in 2 weeks.
You're right. I keep thinking it's next week.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, I keep thinking, you know what it is? I'm thinking about my kids' last day of school next week. That's what it is. And I'm already pulling
my hair
on that.
Well.
Yeah.
I've been having the same problem.
I keep thinking, isn't it a week later this year? Because it's always like the first week of June, but this year it's the second week of June. So, yeah, kind of interesting.
I think.
You can kind of talk a little more specific about that. Aren't they thinking about moving it? Is it next year that they're moving it back a little bit more? I mean, how's that work?
I mean, I don't know if we ever got the formal declaration, but it looks like July 1st, and I think it'll go through.
That's
it's a way of appeasing the college coaches, the distraction that your College World Series is, of course, what you play the whole year for, and then these kids get can't tell me Mike Papke wasn't sitting there listening, and he already had his contract worked out while he was still playing, so there's all sorts of little issues. And
yeah.
I mean, it will mean some guys will have to start, like,
yeah, you do lose,
know,
like a
two
week or
two later than they normally do.
Yeah, but then the grand scheme of things, they get, all it is, it's about getting that foundation, getting a couple games in, going to instructional league, for 3-4 weeks, and then really that next year is what really matters anyway, so. But, I think next week we'll definitely dive in then head first, seeing how we'll be a week out then when we get here next Tuesday night. But I think tonight we need to kind of jump in on the Indians here. I know the Cavs got their thing going on tonight. The Indians are definitely a team to kind of keep some tabs on here because they won 6 games in a row last week. Unfortunately, it came to an end yesterday. Thanks to their bullpen and defensive issues that kind of got them again. Yesterday's game was almost a microcosm of the season and the issue that has plagued them this year. It's been that fifth spot in the rotation. It's been crappy bullpen pitching and just dumb defensive miscues and stuff like that. I mean, they absolutely should have won that game, considering they had scored 8 runs and all that kind of stuff. So, we can kind of dive into that stuff, but what do you think about this? The Indians over the last week or two really seem like they're starting to find their groove. What do you think's been the change in their performance, or that has led them to have this better performance of late?
Yeah, I think it's figuring out the proper alignment, as it were. A big thing of this course is Kipnis playing out of his mind. I was at Saturday's game, so, we started to see Santana kind of come around. Brantley is his typical amazing self. It's an odd year, so Rayburn's going to play really well. For as much as a lot of people bagged on Perez, I mean, Perez was still offensively one of the top 30 catchers in baseball. I think he was about the top 21, 22. I mean, a lot of guys came together. Even J Ram's playing, but I mean, the only guy who really hasn't played better is Chisinau. I mean, he's just stayed below average. For everyone else, I think the game has kind of picked up offensively, and then they started scoring runs. And while the defense isn't vastly improved, you know, all of a sudden you've got Kipnis, who's an above average bat. You have Brantley, who's an above average bat. You have Santana, who's an above average bat. You have Mops, who's been closer to average. And then you got the Rayburn Murphy platoon, which has been an above average bat. So you went from like two guys that were hitting at the start of the year to five guys who are at least average or better. So I think it's just offensive improvement at this point.
Yeah, I'd like to get into that stuff here in a little bit. We do have a caller on the line, but yeah, the Chisholm thing is something that we need to talk about here in a little bit. Perhaps maybe we'll talk about it now, depending on what the caller wants to talk about. But I have a feeling I know who this is. It's not who you might think it is, but I got a good feeling I recognize his phone number while I bring him in. Caller, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Hello from the frozen north woods of Wisconsin. It's the
Hey, what's
Thinker.
Up? What's up, Mike? I haven't talked to you in a while. How you been, man?
Oh, getting by, in the immortal words of David Ogden Sears on MASH, get me the hell out of here.
Yeah.
If any luck, I'll be calling from Norwalk as a home in a couple of weeks, so knock on wood. Anyways,
oh, that'd be great.
I continue to follow you guys on the podcast Tuesday evenings. You have to understand, right now, it's just past 8:30. Where I'm at. So there are nights I am still at work at this point. So I listen to the podcast, try to follow, and every so often a caller comes in on a semi-regular basis. And one more thing. But last week he went off the rails, and I'm sorry. There are times you have to say, time out. We have to address this. I understand we may like certain prospects as they come through. I've had a couple guys on my like list, but trying to suggest that Eric Gonzalez is equal to Francisco Lindor right now is riding the baseball that was hit by Ryan Braun out of Miller Park yesterday. Well off base. I'm in favor of the Indians trying to work through a few things, bringing up Lindor. I'm not saying anything different than any other fan. But I think the next part of the equation is, as you start bringing guys up, what moves are happening. Tony, you asked what's the team doing different. Believe it or not, I actually think the return of Swisher in the clubhouse has helped.
Good point.
Yan Gomes coming back from his injury. Before he went out on the rehabs, he was visiting the team. He was around more often. I think that helped. Now you've got these guys back in the lineup. I'm not suggesting that they're both going to be hitting over 300 and hitting 30 bombs in the rest of the year. It'd be nice if they did, but I think you're starting to see a more complete team. Certain guys aren't called upon to play on a regular basis. Jerry Sands. You see where I'm going with this. Personally, I'd still like to see a move or two made. I think the front office, I'd rather them trade a guy too early than too late. I'm actually interested to find out, assuming Lindor gets back up here, gets up here and starts to play, what are you doing with Ramirez? Are you suddenly going to say, you sit on the bench on a regular basis? This is a guy who probably needs to continue to play. So if you're sending him down to AAA, does that mean Gonzalez can't move up from Akron?
Yeah.
You have Walters, you have Avilas. It seems like you have three guys for one position.
Well, obviously that's going to change after this year. Avilas, I'm assuming, won't be back. You know, then they're going to have to pick the litter between Walters and Ramirez probably for that utility spot next year. They're both almost in some ways, you think about it. They're being groomed for it. Because, you know, I know Walters is playing all over the diamond in Columbus. I mean, he's playing first. He's playing third. You know, left. He can play. Obviously, we know he plays short, some second. You know, he's obviously being groomed for that. And, well, Jose's not being groomed for it. We know he can play second base. We know he can play a little bit of third.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that at some point they're going to add outfield to his repertoire. I can see him being a capable outfielder. Maybe play a little bit of center because of the speed. I mean, easier said than done. I know they tried it with Jason Donald, and that was a failure. 4 or 5 years ago, where the heck that was. Seems like it was yesterday. But I agree. That's a good point, though, with Swisher. I mean, I think people do forget that, for as much as the bat wasn't there, I mean, he's a guy that is one of those leader kind of guys. And I kind of made that point with Hiram last week, the difference between Francisco Lindor and Eric Gonzalez. I mean, you can look at all the talent, all the intangibles, or probably not the intangibles, but look at the speed and the arm and the bat and those things. But it's really those intangibles that sometimes separate these guys, and that's where, like, Lindor's, that's why he's so high above, like, even Ramirez and Gonzalez. It's that ability to lead. It's that charisma he has on the field, that communication he has, that, the leadership, the ability to speak two languages and just presence. That's what guys like Gonzalez and Ramirez don't have yet. They don't have that presence. And that's why a guy like Lindor is viewed as a franchise player. He's a guy that's going to, eventually, I mean, who knows? It may only take him a game, and he'll become a leader for this team. I mean, obviously, probably won't happen. He's young. He's 21, 22. But he's going to really elevate to a leadership role very quickly once he gets up here. And that was one of the things that really took Hiram to task by last week. And, I usually try to bite my tongue a little bit. I know Hiram's kind of new to the prospect game. So when you're new to the prospect game, you kind of overinflate some guys, their value, because you don't understand. You haven't been there. You don't realize that, Anthony Gallo's hitting 25 homers between high A and double A at 26 years old. It's not as much of a big thing as somebody at 21 years old, like Bobby Bradley, or somebody at 18, like Bobby Bradley, who may end up hitting, homers this year in low A. I mean, there's so many things. So, yeah, I agree that, you took that far with the Gonzalez and Lindor. But what are you going to do?
Right. I do want to move on to one other topic, but before I do, considering how much Francona likes his veterans, it makes sense that they would move on from Mike Avilas. I'm not sure that they're going to. And considering that fact, I know there are a few teams out there looking for middle infielder help. If the right trade comes along, I would not be opposed to moving a guy like Jose Ramirez to a Brewers or to a Padres or just somebody who is looking for that.
I agree.
The Indians have done well on the smaller trades. I'd love to see another smaller trade made.
Yeah, I hope
it's Bobby Bradley.
Yeah, and I'll let Jeff answer. Well, I just want to make one point, and I think that I just hope that if they do decide to bring Avilas back, it's 1 year. I don't want to lock into 2-3 years in the guy. I just don't. I mean, he's a bench guy. I mean, we've got Ramirez and obviously Walters potentially to fill that role. But, Jeff, anything you want to add at all to what Mike was saying?
No, I mean, I'm agreeing at this point. I think the best thing about Jose Ramirez kind of turning it around is, he's going to get a few more shots, it's clear. But I really like him, but I think he's a great trade asset. If they can find a way to especially fill that hole at third base for me, or get someone really dominant for the pen.
How about the team they're playing tonight?
I've been pushing for Beltre for, I think, a year now. So, I'm with you on that. Yeah. And he's starting to hit, so we kind of, if we had maybe been a bit earlier to the party, it would have been different, but now.
Perfect addition.
Like the Beltre
Perfect
bold.
Addition.
Well, with that said, you brought up the name Bobby Bradley. The Captains are getting ready to make their every other year trip into the cheese state of Wisconsin, going first to Appleton for a 3-game set and then to Beloit for a 3-game set. I'm planning on taking in at least 2 of them down in Beloit. I guess my question is this. Am I running the risk of not seeing, because they get moved up, a Bobby Bradley, a Sean Brady, Justice Sheffield?
I don't think so.
I don't think any of them.
I mean, those aren't the kind of guys that they're going to rush. I mean, look at Lindor. He spent the whole year in low A. So, and he was their number one prospect in advance and all those things. And they kept him at Lake County the whole year. I mean, unless Bradley goes absolutely crazy and you know, I'm not saying crazy for a week. I'm talking crazy for like a 6-8 week stretch where he's just unbelievable out there and he needs a challenge. Maybe you see him at the end of the year go to Lynchburg, but I think you're perfectly safe with all those guys, Yu Chen Chang and Bradley and Sean Brady and I mean, Justice Sheffield. I mean, any of the guys that are like, that are young, I don't see anybody getting pushed. I mean, maybe some of the college arms, you know, that kind of thing, like Cameron Hill and those kind of guys. I mean, J.P. FireEyes went up today.
Did you say J.P. got moved up today?
Yeah. Actually, yeah, I heard about it like 2 days ago. He's going
got moved
up
to Double A as well.
Who did?
Son of a pup. I was hoping to see him. I just couldn't pronounce the last name, so I didn't bring it up.
Pluko to Double A and FireEyes to him.
I mean, Pluko's is in Lynchburg, so you haven't seen him anyway. So, does he make this play?
Yeah, but it was just the chain of call-ups.
Yeah, that was well-deserved for Pluko. I mean, he should have started in Double A, but that's part of that backlog of starters they have there. I'd be curious to see who moved out of the rotation to make room for him. So that's going to be very interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah. So, well, guys, I'm going to let you go and take care of yourselves, and I'll continue to listen to the podcast.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Call again. Thanks a lot.
I was going to ask, from those kind of top guys at late captain, do you think because of age, Brady is the most likely one to maybe get moved up at some point?
I could see Brady.
And he's going to be 21, right?
Because he was an old high school guy. I think he was 19.
Yeah.
Wasn't he when he signed? You know, almost like that Alex Levisky kind of thing, where he was an older guy. I mean, Levisky was really old. I mean, I think he was 19 going on 20 before the next season started. I think Brady definitely would be my choice for a guy that could potentially. I mean, I think he's going to spend the whole year in Lake County. I mean, he's just not that dominant. But a guy that I could see, you know, near the end of the year, because of the way he's commanding the baseball. I mean, he's barely walking anybody. I'm trying to pull up his stats. I know his walks are really low. Yeah, he's got 6 walks in 42 innings, so he's basically walking one guy every 7 innings, which is pretty damn good. So I could see if that trend continues, and he's showing improvement with his, you know, obviously his pitches and everything else, he would be probably the only young guy I could see that they kind of push up to Lynchburg, maybe last 4 or 5 or 6 weeks of the season, or even for a playoff run if Lake County's out of it and Lynchburg's in it. So that's kind of who I look at there. So let's kind of get back on track here with the Indians. I know before we were talking to Mike, I know we kind of jumped all over the place talking to Mike, but I think the one thing I kind of mentioned was, and you kind of brought it up, was Chisenhall. And we kind of even kind of mentioned it briefly about looking for a third base help in this thing and this and that. Let's kind of go there for a moment. What are we going to do at third base? Obviously, Giovanni and Shell's got that back thing. It's, you know, it was an issue in spring training. Yeah, he came back and he sat out for like a week or a week and a half with the back issue again. He's back in there again, but I just got this bad feeling about it that it's gonna be one of those things that bothers him all year. It's gonna be something that he's gonna just kind of play through. I mean, he's only played 11 games, and you know, I mean, I don't know. He's obviously a guy that if he were healthy, you know, he had that foot thing, obviously, or not the foot, the knee thing, which he got lucky on. Winter ball when everybody thought he may have been out for a long time and actually didn't miss any time. I wonder if the rehab from that or whatever resulted in some of the back stuff. Needless to say, what do you do there? I mean, obviously, Urshela could probably come up right now and be an improvement as far as defense goes at third base. Probably same amount of power as Chisenhall. Maybe not as much discipline, whereas he'll walk as much, but definitely not going to strike out as much. So, I mean, like, what do you do? I mean, do you just keep giving Chisenhall a chance here? I mean, Chisenhall is hitting 204 coming into the night. He's hitting 204 with a 238 on base. He's got three homers, and he's got a 576 OPS with a 60 OPS plus. That's a pretty brutal player. I hate to put it bluntly like that, but I don't even have his WAR number up. I'm sure you got it, Jeff. I mean, I'm sure it's pretty bad. I mean, and his defense has been, obviously, it's been a little bit better than last year, or maybe a little bit more and a little bit better, but it's still, I'm assuming, not looking at the WAR number offhand, that he's still league average at best. What do you do there?
His WAR is... it's a 0.8. He's
take it or leave it. Yeah.
Slightly. Yeah, you know, it's nothing great there. His offensive value is a 0. So he's bringing nothing. He has a 0.7 WAR, and that's mostly based on his defensive value. So right now, the most valuable thing Lonnie Chisenhall is doing to this team is playing third base. And if that's the most valuable aspect of his game, then things have not gone well. We talked about Beltre, and, you know, he's kind of a pipe dream, but there's kind of a Beltre-like light player who a team was trying to essentially give away today, and that was the Dodgers with Juan Uribe before Atlanta backed out because they didn't want to take on his contract. You know, last 2 years, Uribe has had OPSs over 700. He's a two-win defender at third base. He's right-handed, and he's in the last year of a contract that pays him $6.5 million. So if it doesn't work out, I mean, at this point in the year, you know, quarter of the season's done, Indians would be on for, what, close to $5 million. You know, it might be the type of guy. I understand in 87 at-bats this year, it's been rough, and he is 36. But, you know, he didn't really get a long shake with the new front office. The previous 2 years, his OPS pluses were 116 and 119. Like I said, he's a plus defender. He's right-handed. If you can't afford the prospects or the salary of someone like Beltre, I mean, Uribe is a one-year gamble. And like I said, the Dodgers were willing to take Tiesto for him, who essentially was everyone knew was going to be released if a trade didn't go through. So the Dodgers just were trying to drop his salary. So, you know, you could find someone on the Indians to flip them at a low salary that they're trying to get, or a low level prospect. And I think that would get it done. And just a name to keep in mind, you know, he's, like I said, he hasn't done much this year, but he hasn't been given a large opportunity. There were some, you know, the Dodgers signed all those Cuban players and they quickly kind of moved them in. In the last 2 years, Uribe's WAR was 4.1 and 4.0. If you have a guy who's producing 4 wins 2 years in a row, that's pretty good. So, just kind of another name, kind of a poor man's Beltre,
yeah,
right, to keep in mind, and a clubhouse guy that's really well liked by all accounts.
Yeah, and I have no problem with a Juan Uribe kind of thing because it's nothing that's really tied up beyond this year. I mean, and I think the same thing with Beltre. Isn't Beltre only for 1 year? I think he's down to his last year of his deal, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe an option for next year.
He signed an extension. So next year is guaranteed at, I believe, 13 mil, maybe 60. This offseason, it was kind of a quiet one, but they gave him an extension in the offseason. So he is guaranteed money next year. You know, he's guaranteed 8 figures. I'll have to look it up. But that's the one thing that kind of throws up the belt.
Yeah.
Talk, he has 18 million
right.
next year.
18
he's
million,
16
yeah.
this year, 18 million next year. So he's owed a lot. Whereas, like I said, Uribe is 6.5, and it's closer
there.
To 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Uribe monetarily makes a little more sense.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, you wonder, too, the fact that they extended him, if that even takes him off the trade block. I mean, if, you know, a guy like that, you know, you wonder. I mean, he's not having the greatest of seasons, but I still think with that defense he provides, right-handed power, right-handed bat, leadership, I mean, there's so many things there. He'd be a guy plugging right into that cleanup spot in the lineup. Suddenly he got some depth. I mean, got him hitting behind Brantley, probably have Moss 5th, Jan Gomes 6th, and all of a sudden Swisher 7th. You know, all of a sudden his lineup starts getting a little bit of depth and looks a little bit better, and it's better formulated. You know, it's put together a little bit better than it has been up to this point in the season. So, yeah, that's I do think at some point here they're going to have to address that third base hole with a trade. The shortstop thing, I think we've talked about this ad nauseum, but I think at some point they're obviously going to go to Lindor there. That's an internal solution there. And then I guess kind of a segue into the next topic. You know, they've got that bullpen and defense thing. I know we've kind of gone about this a few times now over the past couple weeks, but they've got to find a way to stop the bleeding in the bullpen. Like right now, Salazar's out at the 5 2/3. They're bringing in the middle reliever Hagedorn, hoping to keep this game tied at 3-3. This has been their problem this year, is that middle relief. I mean, well, it's been the bullpen as a whole. There really hasn't been any spot that they've really excelled in. And if you look at, you don't look very far to see how important a bullpen is. When you look down, up in the division at the Royals, it's the strength of that bullpen that it really has helped them, catapult them over the last 2 years. Obviously, the lineup's starting to take off. I don't think their starters are that good. I mean, I think they're a solid group. But it's that great bullpen that shortens the game. They run. They play good defense. I mean, there's so many things that they do much better than the Indians. And it's, I think the Indians have better talent, at least in the position players. But the Royals just, they are more athletic. They run. It's just a better defensive team and those kind of things. So what can they do, though, as far as this defensive issue, or this bullpen issue? Is there anything they can do at this point? Because, yesterday we saw it. The bullpen kind of gave it up again. The defense, it showed its ugly head again. What can they do to stop this? It's been an issue now the last couple of years. I mean, they've been one of the worst defensive teams in baseball.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any way to improve the defense because they're locked into so many guys. Bullpen, I think, Hagedorn just, he got the out. But it was interesting. If you look at his splits, he might just be a loogie. He might be a very good loogie, but that might be his role. He might be being miscast. And then if I could, I want to throw some numbers at you and tell me if this would be a guy you'd want in the Indians bullpen. In 18 innings, he's averaging 9.8 strikeouts per 9 innings. His opponents are hitting... His FIP is 1.3. His ERA is 3.12. No one's hit a home run off the pen, and he's averaging one walk per 9. Sounds like a pretty good reliever, right?
Sounds like a great reliever. But how much did he make?
He made $200,000.
$200,000.
And that's it. And his name...
how's he making $200,000?
His name is Rafael Betancourt for the last place Colorado Rockies.
Oh, God. I love that.
I mean, it's not ideal, but, he pitched here. He knows it. He retired in 2013, came back late in 2014, pitched okay in the minors, and he's been nails for the Rockies this year. Salary-wise, he fits. It makes no sense for Colorado. I mean, heck, maybe you try to do a 2-for-1 and get LaTroy Hawkins out of there, who's in his 40s. I mean, they don't have any need for either of those guys. They're clearly starting to rebuild. But I mean, Betancourt might be the ideal guy to go get. He's low salary. They can't ask for a ton for him. But, you could flip, maybe someone from around the 30th best prospect on your list, I bet, and get a Rafael Betancourt. But, I mean, those numbers are fantastic. I know it's only 17 innings, so yes, we can say small sample size. But he, ever since he left Cleveland, I mean, he was nails in Colorado, and that's not an easy place to pitch by any mean. I mean, his career numbers are just fantastic as well. Career FIP is a 299. He's averaging over 9.5 strikeouts. So, when I talked about beforehand, it's like, well, maybe a Papelbon, but I think I was kind of looking at it wrong because, the salary is so high. Betancourt, if you can get him in and slide him into that eighth inning role, it might actually work out.
Yeah, talk about a guy who came out of nowhere to have a pretty darn good career. He's 40 years old now. Guy that was signed to a minor league contract. I mean, wasn't really pitching anywhere. And the Indians in 2003 signed him at 28 years old. And I think he came out of Japan. I think he pitched in Japan in 2002. And
he started as a shortstop, right?
2000, he was in Japan.
Boston.
Yeah. So he started off in the shortstop. Yeah, I mean, it's like, and then he was in the minor leagues for a while. A long time. We're just trying to get the exact amount of years here as I'm looking at his career. Between Japan and he was in the minors, he 94, 95, 96, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He didn't pitch in 2002. I think he was in the Mexican League or he was hurt. But it's just something. I remember when they signed him in 2003, he didn't do anything the previous year. He was either hurt or he was pitching in some obscure league or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, he, 94 is when he was originally with the Red Sox in the minor league system. And he didn't make a major league debut until almost 10 years later, 28 years old. So, he's an interesting case of perseverance, a guy that just kind of did his thing. And, I would love to have him back. It's too bad he never really had a chance to stick around here. Because I thought, obviously, he was one of the key bullpen guys they had in the mid-2000s. And, I know they moved him in. I think it was 2009 in a trade to,
Connor Graham.
I
wrote it right up on Graham. That's why I remember it. The Rockies then.
That wasn't much return at all. I mean, that guy lasted a year and a half.
A salary drop.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. It really is what it was. Anytime you make a trade for a bullpen, minor league bullpen guy, a guy that's not it's different. It's a different thing if he's a top, 10 prospect, a legit closer prospect. Anytime you make a trade for a minor league reliever, it's typically not a guy that you really envision doing much for your organization unless something just absolutely clicks and it works out for you. So, I would definitely welcome Betancourt back. I mean, I think it's amazing, some of the injuries he's had and how he's come back and done his thing. I mean, he's 40 years old this season, and, he's arguably having his best season up to this point, his best season as a pro. His walk rate is equal to his career low, which was in 2007, which was the playoff year for the Indians when it was Raffy left and Raffy right that year. And his strikeout rate above that year. He's just not allowing base runners and he's striking out guys. It's amazing. So I would definitely, that's a good trade target. I would definitely look at him and, Juan Uribe. I mean, these guys aren't high impact guys, but they're guys that can help. They're not going to cost a lot of money. You're not going to mortgage your future with losing a good young player. So, that's kind of what they kind of have to look at here. I still think that they do need to find a bat, though, that can, from the right side, that can be a little bit more of impact quality. It's just finding that guy is near impossible because it costs so much to acquire that kind of guy.
Yeah, that's going to be the hard bit of it. It's especially because, I do draft coverage, and it's pretty clear that just right-handed power is probably the biggest commodity in baseball. It's the hardest to find thing. Everyone's looking for it. No one has it. And I know people are not gonna like my suggestions because I'm advocating dumpster diving and the fans hate it when the Indians dumpster dive. But, it's a young team. You've got a lot of pieces in place. And if you can just get some placeholders who are performing well, that's kind of what they, if you get someone like Uribe and he comes in and he helps solidify kind of like the lower half of your order and gives you a right-handed bat for a year, then you hope Urshela is healthy and ready to go next year. Or, at this point, we'll see. Maybe Betancourt can give you 2 years, as unlikely as that would be, but he's a he was never a velocity guy. He was a guy who lived on the edges of the zone more than any pitcher has ever done. I think I read a Fangraphs article about how during Mariano Rivera's retirement year, how it was interesting that Betancourt was retiring because Mariano Rivera lived on one pitch and was successful.
Yeah.
And Rafael Betancourt had multiple pitches, but they all went to the same spot. One of them lived by one pitch and one of them lived by one area. And it was a real interesting piece. But, I mean, there's so much already in place and there's guys performing. And I don't know, I feel like Band-Aids are what the team – the pitching is too good. I don't think they're going to be in last
for
very long. I don't trust the Twins to remain as high. No, Ricky Nolasco isn't going to keep doing this. Kyle Gibson's having a very good year. I liked him as a draft prospect, but the numbers show he's been a little lucky. You know, it's Phil Hughes last year showed he was legit, but the rest of that staff eventually is going to be some cratering.
Well, and I think if you make a couple of those defensive improvements, that, you know, as we know, it's going to help the pitching. I mean, the pitching has really struggled simply because we're not making plays that, you know, we should be making. You know, we're not making the routine plays, or I guess maybe a better way to put it, we're not getting the balls at an average, you know, shortstop or an average second baseman, those kind of things, an average center fielder gets to. There's too many balls that are falling in the outfield or too many ground balls that are getting through that should be knocked down, and those are extending innings, you know. So, yeah, I think once they can find some consistency with the defense and get that going, you know, you're going to see the starting pitching staff kind of take off, and I think the team performance as well. And then they got to find a way to shut down these teams and keep these leads, because how many times this year have they gone out and, you know, taken a lead like 4-3 or gotten back in the game, maybe – You know, maybe they were down early 4-0, and now it's 4-3. They had a big 3-run fifth inning, and then the next thing, the bullpen gives up 3 runs. You know, it's those response innings where they're having, you know, trouble shutting teams down, and that was a big thing that they've done well at least for the last 2 years under Francona, but this year they're just, you know, struggling. And I think obviously, you know, we talked about this too, is, you know, maybe this bullpen is just overworked. It's just tired. It's just that. It's that hangover effect kind of thing. So, you know, I Betancourt could help. I mean, there are options out there to go get. You know, the question is Antonetti going to be aggressive and going to get those? How long is he going to wait? They've never really been a very active trade team, at least during the season, where they're not, you know, they don't make a lot of big trades. I mean, I know the Ubaldo Jimenez trade was probably, you know, one of the most notable ones they made, but aside from that, you know, it's been Zepchinski 1 year. It's been, last year obviously was different. You know, they're kind of giving away pieces, but it's been these small little tiny moves to kind of help this team where they're not getting a lot of money, high dollar players in return, and they're not giving up a lot of prospects as well. So, you know, man, they're just having a terrible. Oh, they got lucky. They got to finally have better bats with guys on base. They had those, you know, they had big runners on base last inning, and two guys out with nobody else this inning, and they're not having very good at bats. But you know, I guess we'll kind of see how that goes from there. But I think trying to think of a different way to jump into this next topic. What do you think about the return of Yan Gomes? I mean, you know, I know Mike over the phone kind of brought up how Swisher's return has kind of maybe helped from a clubhouse perspective. What do you think the Gomes return of Gomes has kind of helped? I mean, obviously they're already kind of winning a couple of games in a row before he came back this weekend on Sunday. But do you think his return is going to help keep this team going in the right direction?
You know, you talked about adding the big right-handed bat. That might just be getting Gomes in there. I mean, he's a guy who has pop, who, you know, can come in and, you know, hit maybe 20 home runs in the catching positions on the right side, provide balance, lineup balance. You know, Perez was doing an all right job, but by moving him to the bench, it kind of puts him back in an ideal role to perform. Like I said, I feel like it's almost like getting a big addition. Losing him for 6 weeks is a major loss. Cause, you know, I mean, Prez is a good pitch framer as well, but And he was finally throwing guys out. He had some problems with caught stealing at the start. I mean, you could see Perez getting things together right as Gomes got back. But for as well as Perez has done, especially over the last week, Gomes is clearly the better player. And he's going to upgrade you offensively and defensively. And he's going to help your pitching because of the way he can frame pitches.
Yeah, I mean, and that's obviously his impact with this team and and why he's you know, an all-star caliber catcher. Obviously, it won't happen this year, but a guy that is definitely one of the top, you know, 3, 4, 5 catchers in all baseball. So you get that leader back there behind the plate that impacts his game, you know, the Indians team in so many ways, and you know that's just going to be a boost. In some way, shape, form, in so many ways. So that definitely helps. And now I think aside from Lindor, there's not many other moves they can make from within. So this is kind of going back to the whole tinkering thing, where at this point they've almost got to kind of tinker and find ways to make improvements where they're needed. You know, Chisenhall has an option left. They can easily send him to Columbus if they wanted to. They can, there's not as easy with guys like Bourne and Swisher and those kind of things. They have to kind of work around those contracts. But, you know, as I said before, I still think at some point I would not be surprised if they just designate like a guy like Michael Bourne. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, at some point next year, they're not going to want to have him meet that at-bat threshold, whereas mutual option for 2017 best. So the only way to have that happen is to trade him, and no one's going to trade for him. So it means he's going to have to be released. So at some point here, I would not be surprised if they just say, you know what, we're going to eat the money next year at sunk cost, and we go with somebody else out there, or we find somebody else in a trade to kind of fit in out there that helps us. So, yeah, it is kind of like that tinkering phase. I mean we're, you know, we're past that 40-game mark. So, you know, now it's to the point where how much patience is enough? You know, I mean, do you wait 60 games? Do you wait 50? Do you wait to the All-Star break? I mean, when do you start making moves? Because 40 games is a pretty good sample size. Well, that's about 150 or so plate appearances, depending on, you know, who it is, you know, the player and where they bat in the lineup. You know, it may be more than that, actually. I mean, that's a pretty decent sample size, but you know, you do kind of want to give the benefit of the doubt of guys who have proven it in the past, but guys that maybe haven't, like Ramirez and in some ways Chisenhall, you maybe have a little bit more of a itchy trigger finger and aren't afraid to pull off a kind of move externally or internally to help out this team. So that's kind of what I'd be looking for if I was the Indians, is, you know, find a third base option. You know, find that, you know, bullpen arm, as you mentioned with Betancourt. What about the fifth spot in rotation? I mean, that's another spot that we're still seeing constant turnover and just awful outings. I mean, it doesn't matter who's in there. I mean, I know Markham had a pretty decent first outing, you know, a week ago, but his follow-up outing yesterday was not very good. I mean, it's just been, it doesn't matter who's in there, Bruce Chen, Zach McAllister, TJ House, you know, Sean Markham, aside from like one start among all those guys in that fifth spot, it's been a disaster where they're out of games almost before they start. What can they do there in that fifth spot? I mean, obviously you want to find more consistency with your rotation. And, you know, when you have that consistency, that's what allows you to get on those long winning streaks and those kind of things. I mean, what are their options for that fifth spot in rotation? How long do you stick with Markham? And then I guess who do you potentially replace him with?
You know, I think the hope is that House can regain some form. I mean, I wanted to believe in House, but the numbers last year almost too good. You kind of knew you were probably playing with House money, that it was a situation where he was overperforming. You know, he's more, maybe he did make a step forward and I'm just being too negative, but he was always more of a depth guy to me. I think the long-term hope is, you know, I don't know how they're going to fill it in, but I feel like the hope for next year is Is it someone like maybe Anderson or Plutko in AA and that they'll perform this year? And I mean, it might be aggressive, but someone like Plutko, maybe because of his age experience, could be someone who gets a shot, probably not before next year, but maybe, you know, Anderson's a guy who ends up helping in the pen later this year because I believe he's already on the 40-man. And then maybe next year you try him back in the pen. I don't know this year. It's, you know, I think it's going to be House by default at some point because, I mean, it was, what, 2 years between Markham starts and there's all the arm troubles. And you give him a few more tries. Maybe it's like Scott Kazmir who, you know, missed 2 years. And as I recall, he had some really rough starts at the start and then ended up turning it around. And, you know, if not, maybe you do hit that secondary trade market and you see, you know, maybe with someone like Scott Kazmir cost in a trade because he's going to be some, if Oakland has the second worst record in baseball right now. They won last night, so they're no longer the worst record, but if they continue to struggle, they're going to probably move on and you keep looking. You know, the Indians don't always make those big moves, but you know, I remember back in 2000, I guess that was a sell-off as well, but you know, you think back to when they made the moves to add someone like Russell Branyan or some of those smaller moves, and I wouldn't be shocked to see them. I don't think they make anything before June 1st. I mean, that's always kind of been their arbitrary deadline. But I would not be shocked to see a series of small moves, small trades. I feel like the minors are pretty deep right now. There's a lot of talent. Even guys that, you know, they're seemingly not as high on anymore, like a C.C. Lee, who seems pretty far down the pecking order. He's someone who still has some value to other organizations. You know, you think back to a few years ago when that's who San Diego demanded in a trade for Ryan Ludwig, and the Indians said no. There's still some pieces. Teams, you know, the Indians have before turned some of those bullpen arms they're not super high on into some cheap help. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I think we might see them take some cheap alternatives because of where they are record-wise. I think if they had a better record, they'd be more likely to make a slash move, but where they are, you know, second from last, they're more likely to kind of make some small moves and look for help.
Yeah, and they're kind of running out of options for the fifth spot. I mean, you know, they went from having like a what seemed like an endless supply of options, so they're down to Markham and House, and then after that, you're digging really deep and potentially going to Michael Roth. And you know, I don't think anybody wants to see Michael Roth in the rotation. I mean, maybe he does his thing and is solid, but you know, that's not a guy that you want, you know, nothing against him, but you know, a guy that has not had consistent success at the major league level yet and doesn't really have much as far as stuff goes, and you can only get so far on guts and guile and those kind of things where you're near perfect out there. So yeah, they've got to find some more options, and you know, they've got some interesting arms that are coming along. I mean, obviously, Cody Anderson looks like he's bouncing back and doing his thing. Kind of pitching not as great as he did in 2013, but he's much better than he was last year. So he's kind of, I think he's kind of leveled off, and the performance this year is kind of like the real Cody Allen based on what's going on there. Not Cody Allen, Cody Anderson. So you know, you've got, you know, Ryan Merritt and Sean Morimoto. I mean, those are guys that really aren't going to impact this team this year. Maybe they kind of help out next year at some point, if that. But the guy that I think is really interesting to me, and he's the guy that kind of went up, he kind of got promoted today, was Adam Plutko. That's a, you know, he's a guy, because of his advanced ability to pitch, his pedigree in college as a big game pitcher and being very advanced and those kind of things. He's a guy that I could absolutely see the Indians, if they were in desperation mode or really needed that starter and he was pitching lights out in Akron after five or six starts, I could definitely see a guy like him coming up and pitching with the Indians in July or August or whatever and potentially filling that fifth spot. Now, he's not going to need a lot of time in AA or AAA to get acclimated. I mean, he's pretty close to a finished product as you can get out there. And, I mean, he had a hell of a showing in Lynchburg. But, you know, so a lot of that, too, is he's way too advanced for that league. And he never really should have started in Lynchburg. He should have started in Akron. But the Indians just wanted to make sure of things, obviously. I mean, what do you think about a guy like Pluko? I mean, you know, we can kind of dive a little bit to the minor league kind of stuff, but, I mean, what do you think about his potential in helping his team out in the near future?
Yeah, he's interesting because he was an 11th round pick, and I actually remember on draft day talking to one of the bigger names in the kind of the draft industry field, and when Pluko was drafted, they go, well, there's someone who's never going to sign. And I go, the Indians have saved a lot of room. And then the person made kind of a snide comment about everyone thinking their team was going to sign everyone they drafted. But the Indians seem to have targeted Pluko. He was someone they liked. He got the third highest bonus, I believe, that year. I think after Frazier and Brady, they had saved money. He was their target. And, I mean, obviously they gave him like $800,000 or $900,000. It was a solid chunk of change. They believed in him quite a bit to go get him, because that was also the year when the Ross Kivett went back on his signing. So then there was concern they wouldn't have enough money to get him. But or I shouldn't say on a signing, just to get it correct. They you know, everyone has an agreed upon deal, and then he decided to not sign. But you know, he's always been advanced. I agree. He's one of those guys that we kind of know what he is. It's kind of surprising he didn't start higher. And, you know, he's pretty much the same guy he was his senior year at UCLA. I mean, to some, he was a bit of a disappointment in college, even though he dominated because he was, you know, he advanced as a pitcher, but his stuff never really improved from his high school level. He didn't add velocity. He didn't do any of the things that people want, but highly successful pitcher everywhere he's gone. And at some point, you know, we'll see. Double-A is always kind of the big test. We'll see if this is finally where the fact that he has just average stuff catches up to him. But I wouldn't bet against him. And, I mean, even on draft day, anyone I talked to agreed he's a future 4-5. So if he can do that this year, then he's just doing what most people expected. It's not that people don't think he can perform. I think most people think that's what he can do. It's just expecting him to be a front or mid guy might be more of a fool's errand. But yeah, I think he makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, I mean, and he's a guy that I think we really should pay special attention to how he does perform at a double-A level. Because if he goes out there over the course of, you know, 5, 6, 7 starts and does his thing, you know, you kind of want to see the performance out of him. You know, it's always tough to kind of, you know, gauge how well a prospect's doing because, yeah, you don't want to put too much stock into performance because there are things that guys are working on and this and that. But he's an example of a pitcher where really the stats do matter because there's not a lot that he needs to work on. He's a polished pitcher. You know, the upside is very minimal. There's not much more he can do to his, you know, breaking ball and his pitches. His velocity, you know, the Indians are trying to work on that, you know, get him a little more conviction, a little harder. And, you know, maybe add another mile per hour or two to the fastball. But, you know, when it comes down to it, they just want to see him perform and do his thing. And, I mean, he no doubt did that at high A, I'll tell you that much. I mean, he had a walk rate below 1 per 9 innings. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, you combine that with a near 9 K per 9 as well. And, you know, he doesn't give up the long ball that much. I know that he suppressed the batting averages of a lot of guys, but, you know, sometimes that batting average balls in play thing, you got to look at it too, where a guy is just too advanced. He's making, you know, good pitches and getting hitters to swing at his pitches. And sometimes it is sustainable when it's that low. I mean, I think his 214 batted balls in play average is 120 points or so below the minor league average, which I believe most people consider is like, you know, 320 to 340, somewhere in there, depending on who you talk to. So, and then, you know, he's obviously not, you know, once guys get on base, he's leaving them there. He's got 91% strand rate. You know, he's leaving guys on base. So, you know, you do think over the course of the year those things are going to kind of level out. And then it's going to be interesting to see if some of that, to see what numbers do translate to double A. You know, if he does start to have some trouble, a guy when guys get on base, he can't get that out. You know, he's too much contact, those kind of things. So he's really, to me, one of the most exciting arms to watch in the system right now. Not because he's going to be Danny Salazar part two or something like that, but because he's the, I think, I really think he's the next prospect that gets a chance in Cleveland, and that's above a guy like Corey, above Cody Anderson or Will Roberts or Ryan Merritt, you know, those kind of guys. I really think that he can move fast, and if the Indians do need somebody, that he could be somebody they turn to as late as, you know, as early as this season, at some point this season. So, I mean, is there anybody else out there? Maybe, we got a couple minutes left here. Is there anybody else out there in the minor league side of things as far as pitching goes, starting pitching goes, that maybe kind of interests you that you think could maybe help the Indians out this year, or if not this year, could be really strongly in the mix next season?
You know, I'd forgotten about Will Roberts. And, you know, I just know he's a guy that the Indians are high on. The Indians love players from the University of Virginia. I think they've taken one in the draft 4 straight years. Just, you know, I look for them to target, or I have to look and see who their target this year might be. Might be someone like Joe McCarthy in round two. But I know they like him, and, you know, I feel like it's getting to the point where, you know, if Markham has another bad outing, they just might start trying people. You know, maybe it is Pluko, but I think,
you know, what's gonna hurt?
If it's not Pluko, that what?
Oh, well, I was going to say, I mean, really, what's it going to hurt? You can't get worse than what Chen and Markham have shown in three of those four outings. I mean, you can have, you can put Michael Roth in there and see what he can do. You can do Nick Morande. There's so many guys, Giovanni Soto. There's so many guys that you could potentially start that might just see what you got at that point. I mean, what are you going to lose, right?
I think that might be the approach. I mean, my only thing on Roth is if Roth's best asset is he's left-handed. I think if he has anything else, we wouldn't be talking about him. I thought it was interesting after the Indians failed to sign him as a junior that they really must like him because they targeted him when he became a free agent to bring him in. I mean, they're just – I think they know it's an issue. You know, even adding someone like Nick Morimondo last year, who was a left-handed pitching prospect, I mean, they are just – in some respects, they're kind of grasping at straws. There is not a lot at the higher levels, and I think they knew – when they went out and paid cash for, was it Brewer? Was the guy's name?
Yeah,
ended up getting
Brewer.
Hurt.
Yeah,
I mean, it's an issue. They know it's an issue, and it'll be interesting to see. Whenever the Indians in the past have known they have like a massive issue, they start to overcompensate in the draft and just single-handedly things. So we'll see if this is the year of the pitcher, knowing past knowledge of kind of how they start to, when there's an issue, go the other way.
Yeah, well, seeing how they've finding out how they actually fix this fifth starter spot and how long they have how much patience they have with a guy like Markham and those kind of things. That's gonna be something that we kind of keep our tabs on over the next couple of weeks. You know, those are guys that deserve a short hook. You don't need to give those guys a long look because you just don't. There's just no reason to. Because you know the history is not really on their side, especially in the most recent history for a guy like Markham. So, anyway, we run out of time for this week. We'll be back next week. I think we're going to do a pretty heavy show on the draft, maybe start talking about some tribe stuff. Maybe we can get a guest or two on and talk some tribe draft. I'll see if I can maybe get somebody on from the Indians, and we'll figure out something like that or a pre-recorded interview. So, anyway, hopefully the Tribe can pull this one out tonight. And it looks like the Cavs are rolling. They're going to get a 4-game sweep, go out in the NBA Finals. So assuming that holds up, congrats to them. But we'll be back next week. Until then, go Tribe.